Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Me, Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who has not only considerable intelligence, but has worked as an intelligence analyst for the Department of Public Safety in his native state of Texas, is our first guest. He is Todd Bensman with the Center for Immigration Studies, where he's a National Security Fellow. He is also the author of America's Covert Border War, the untold story of the nation's battle to prevent jihadist infiltration. We've been awaiting its publication for some time with great expectation. And Todd, congratulations on getting it out and for having the courage to write this really important book.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, the topic is probably one of the more taboo subjects about the border, where almost anybody who raises it that jihadists could cross our southern border is slam dunked for doing so. We saw that happen with Donald Trump just a year or two ago when he brought it up and said that there were Middle Eastern migrants coming through. And it was just an epic pushback on that. And I think the country ended up confused as to what was the truth and what wasn't on that one.
So you went and looked at the problem squarely and concluded that it is, in fact, a real threat to this country. Unfortunately, Todd, as you know so well, this is only part of the cognitive dissonance, I guess the psychologists might call it, that we seem to bring to this subject of jihadism and the terrorism that flows from it inside our country as well as at our borders. But to just talk a bit about the problem at the moment, I mean, as opposed to the good old days of Donald Trump, when at least we weren't encouraging people to come here, the Biden administration is doing that and more, seemingly at a minimum, making it easier for what I think of as Sharia supremacists bent on violent jihad to get into the country. No?
Right. Well, almost all of the policy actions that Biden has taken so far have contributed very directly, conclusively to a vast migrant surge that is now underway at the southern border. And as we saw in Europe just a few years ago, when you have migrant surges like this, it collapses all border control systems meant to vet people and figure out who they are. And everybody just kind of who wants to get in gets right on in to the Greyhound bus stations and very little vetting. And when that happened in Europe, the ISIS organization infiltrated many, many operatives, scores of operatives in that flow, and conducted bloody mayhem from one end of the continent to the other, as I'm fond of saying, by embedding as asylum seekers long enough to be able to, you know, equip themselves with weapons and explosives. Those attacks in Europe are still going on now, 5 years later. They're still coming through, and I think that there are big lessons to be learned. In the southern hemisphere, in our hemisphere, the western hemisphere, in the southern countries to the tip of South America, you have a migration flow from those very same countries in the Middle East. Thousands of, they're called special interest aliens in government parlance, are moving. They're on the move through the Darien Gap in Panama. And for a while, they were blocked there by pandemic-related border closures to contain the virus. But last week, Panama opened its border and to Costa Rica, and they are absolutely flooding through. There are reports in southern Mexico of people from those countries absolutely swamping migrant shelters in southern Mexico on their way here to the southern border. And the issue is that when this finally reaches critical mass and our border systems are swamped, we will be at heightened risk, very much heightened risk. And I worry about who's coming through from Panama.
And whether we even know who's coming through from Panama, I guess is the point. And your book, and by the way, I wanted to get you on quickly because we've appreciated so much your contribution to this program on a regular basis, and I wanted to do a proper shout out to you for getting this important book about America's covert border war published and in bookstores. But we would like to have you back, Todd Bensman, for a hour-long conversation where we can really hopefully do justice to what you've got here. But just quickly, on the nature of the border war, I mean, we were fighting that war under Donald Trump, I think it's fair to say. We used a variety of techniques to try to keep not only jihadists out, but, you know, all kinds of particularly problematic, but more generally, illegal aliens seeking entry into our country. That war, I would argue, has been terminated by the Biden team. Is it continuing in some form that we are not aware of, or have we basically surrendered?
Well, I'm not sure I would characterize it as a termination. I think that it's at risk. There are careerist Homeland Security professionals, personnel who run that. The tip of the spear is ICE Homeland Security investigations. And while ICE's interior enforcement has been neutered completely, there'll be almost no interior enforcement once jihadists get into the country to, you know, kind of investigate and round them up. ICE Homeland Security is still deep in Latin America at embassies and in allied nations across the Americas, hunting special interest aliens, smugglers, and also manning tripwires that are set up throughout the Americas to alert us about jihadists that are coming through so we can capture and apprehend them down there and deport them back to their home countries. That has been going on for years under Democrats and Republicans alike. And I think that the reason it hasn't been more politicized is because nobody's known about it. But also I firmly believe that it's under-resourced and that there are problems with that program down there that public light would help us improve. And we really need to improve it at a time when there's mass migration and a surge like we're seeing now.
And that's really what I wanted to come back to you on, Todd, is there are things that we can do to enhance our capacity to keep these jihadists from getting into the United States. It starts with knowing that they're trying to come here and acknowledging that, and as you say, to using techniques that have been proven effective. We'll come back to you hopefully in the next week or so, Todd, for a more detailed assessment of all of this. But for the moment, thank you again for joining us regularly, but also in connection with the new book, America's Covert Border War, The Untold Story of the Nation's Battle to Prevent Jihadist Infiltration. Congratulations on getting it out. We'll talk with you more about it soon. In the meantime, keep up the great work you do at the Center for Immigration Studies. Next up, we'll speak with Gordon Chang about the president's defining genocide as a cultural norm. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back for what is our weekly visit, one of the real high points of our week, with Gordon Chang. He is one of the country's preeminent experts on communist China and the threat the Chinese Communist Party represents to our country, to our freedoms, to our security. And it is always, well, chilling to hear from him what is the latest on this front, but it's absolutely vital that we know. He is the author most recently of The Great U.S.-China Tech War. We'll be talking a little bit about that in a moment. And of course, you can follow him as I do at Gordon G. Chang. And I strongly encourage you to do so. Gordon, it's good to be back with you. Welcome.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Frank.
You were on Tucker Carlson's program last night. The great Mark Stein was in the chair rather than Tucker, but you got into something that I wanted to lead off with and have you reprise for our audience, if you will. Namely, this line from President Biden in the course of the town hall he had with Anderson Cooper on CNN on Tuesday about the genocide in the western China area known as East Turkestan by the natives and Xinjiang by the Chinese communists. What did the president say, and what are the implications of it?
Well, this was a very rambling answer to Anderson Cooper's question, because he asked President Biden, did you speak to Xi Jinping about human rights abuses? And Biden came in with an answer which was really sort of hard to understand, but the implications of it are chilling. Because essentially what he did was he suggested that China's genocide and crimes against humanity are the result of Chinese cultural norms. So here we have someone who decries white supremacy, but he came dangerously close to expressing white supremacist sentiments. Because by suggesting that crimes against humanity flow from these cultural norms, he was effectively calling China's culture barbaric. And indeed, he was even calling China's culture racist, because these crimes against humanity are directed against minorities, the Uyghurs, the Kazakhs, Tibetans. So, you know, I'm sure he did not intend to say this, but in effect, that's what he said. That's what he conveyed. And many Chinese Americans today are outraged by those comments.
Gordon, I think it's fair to say that these features are CCP norms, that is to say Chinese Communist Party norms. There's no doubt that it is a racist operation with sort of Han supremacism at its core. There's no doubt that genocide and other crimes against humanity are something that it has practiced throughout its sordid history. But I take your point that implicating all Chinese in this kind of behavior, or suggesting that it's actually something they subscribe to, is not only offensive, it is, well, maybe racist, xenophobic, I mean, bigoted, all the sorts of things that we're endlessly told by the left is true of those of us that disagree with them. But beyond that, it suggests that the president is not going to follow the designation of the previous administration, notably Mike Pompeo on his way out the door, or even the personal, you know, sentiments and beliefs of his Secretary of State and his Secretary of the Treasury, both of whom testified to their support for that designation when they were before the congressional committees for their confirmation hearings.
Yes. Actually, and he won't follow what he said during the campaign when he said that what China was doing constituted genocide. That came from his own mouth. That came from his campaign spokesman. Really, what this shows is that at his core, Joe Biden does not understand what's going on in China. He also has this outdated view of China as some sort of regime that we should help and support. It just shows that he's completely out of date and that he is not prepared to defend America. Now, his comments last night, I don't know where to begin, actually, when you start to pull them apart, because no, Chinese by their DNA are not genocidal maniacs, which is what Biden effectively said. So this was, as you say, offensive, but for the American public, it means that Biden is not prepared to defend them.
Let me ask you, and it's speculative, I grant, but do you think this might have had something to do with what Xi Jinping told him, or perhaps even dictated to him, in the course of this two-hour-long conversation between them?
Well, that's what Biden said. because he was relaying the conversation that he had with Xi Jinping during those 2 hours. And it's also, I think, a reflection of what Kissinger has been talking about, because Biden ventured into Chinese history. And that is what Kissinger always discusses when he excuses China's behavior. He goes into this long discourse of going back 200-300 years or even further back into China's imperial era. So, you know, it's probably a mixture of things where Biden got that, but clearly he was wrong on all counts. And it shows you that his instincts, Biden's instincts, are wrong.
And that's what I wanted to get to next, Gordon Chang. We're watching him dismantle Trump's policies towards China, which I think we've broadly agreed with were needed correctives to the years of so-called engagement with that kind of misconception that the richer China became, the more they'd be like us and it would all come out well. Not so. It seems as though there are sort of two different strategies for taking down the Trump program. One is to revoke it outright, which they have done on a number of things, including not calling it the China virus and re-engaging with the World Health Organization and supporting the Confucius Institute's continued operations and so on. And then, Gordon, they're also just sort of suspending things that they don't like and saying that they're reviewing them, I guess perhaps simply because they couldn't see their way clear to revoking everything simultaneously. Is that how you see it? And are we likely at the end of all of this to basically have a full-on, well, as he says, America's back, full-on return to the policies of the Obama-Biden presidency and some of those before?
We'll find out fairly soon, because when the administration has put on hold some of the Trump-era protections, it said that it was doing this for review purposes. So, for instance, the Justice Department went to both the Ninth Circuit and the Circuit Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia and asked them to stop reviewing a Trump-era bans on WeChat and TikTok, the popular Chinese apps.
This is a subject of an important new paper by you on Gatestone Foundation platforms.
Yes, and I put that in the context of the other things that China has also that Biden has also done. And the one that just sticks in my craw is this January 20. In other words, just hours after taking the oath of office, Biden signs an executive order that repeals the Trump-era ban on China selling equipment for our electricity grid. Trump is trying to prevent the Chinese from sabotaging our grid, and Trump said, and Biden said, no, I'm repealing it, which means China can now sell us more sabotage transformers. And this is not just a theoretical concern, Frank, because there have been compromised equipment that China tried to put into our grid. So this is indefensible. There is no defense of taking down that protection while he reviews this, because he should have left it in place.
Well, unfortunately, it's not just that they've tried to sell us this stuff. It is in place, Gordon. I'm told that there are between 200 and 300 large transformers from China inside our grid right now. And one of them was taken by, I believe it's the Department of Homeland Security, for investigation down to Sandia Laboratories to be forensically examined, and that was like a year ago, and we haven't heard anything more about it, but I have the feeling that there really are problems with those transformers, and it does constitute a vulnerability made all the more apparent in light of what's been happening to grid down states like Texas in recent days. But Gordon, let me come back to something that one of our colleagues, Sam Faddis, talked about on this program, and that's the personnel piece of this. So we'll get into this in a bit greater detail with Congressman Jim Banks shortly in connection with an important sort of analysis that he's provided as the chairman of the House Republican Study Committee. It's personnel, too, and it starts right at the top. The degree to which many of these senior Biden-Harris administration officials are, well, compromised by the Chinese Communist Party is very worrying, and especially when you see the kinds of things that they're doing now that you've just spoken about. Would you agree with Sam Faddis's characterization of Joe Biden as a no-kidding, real-life Manchurian candidate?
Well, I wouldn't characterize it, but I think what we should do is look at what he's been doing so far. And what he's been doing so far really is distressing, because he is, as we've discussed, either taking down or putting on hold these protections, which are absolutely essential for us. And, you know, people can ascribe motive, but the point is that what the president is doing is dangerous. And as I said, in one case, completely indefensible. You know, we're going to learn more about what Biden's eventual policy will be by maybe about June or July, because those reviews will have been finished by then and we'll actually see what he's been doing. But so far, when we look at the executive orders, we see that he's been given a lot of gifts to China. And he's been doing this, Frank, without getting anything in return. And that's another issue that we should be focusing on.
We'll be talking about that with you next week for sure. Gordon Chang, thank you for your time today and for the super work that you do on these issues on all of your platforms, including, of course, Twitter at Gordon G. Chang. Thank you for sharing your insights with us today. Come back to us again next week. Next up, we'll speak with Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana about his take on China and more. Straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back, and it is a distinct pleasure and high privilege to be able to say a special welcome to our next guest. He is Congressman Jim Banks. He represents the people of the 3rd Congressional District in the United States House of Representatives, where he has been a member of Congress since 2016. He is a member of the Committee on Armed Services of the House of Representatives, also of Veterans Affairs, and the Committee on Education and Labor. He is himself a veteran of the United States Navy and a leader now in the Congress as the chairman of the House Republican Study Committee. And it is in connection with an important initiative of that committee that I was very, very anxious to talk with him. And welcome, Congressman. It's great to have you here at Secure Freedom Radio.
Frank, great to be with you. I've listened to you on the radio, I feel like, for so many years, and it's good to be with you on your show now myself. So looking forward to having this conversation with you.
Good. Well, especially since I know it's top of mind for you, as it is for me, what the Chinese Communist Party is up to. And particularly worrying is what the new President of the United States and his administration are doing, that it seems will embolden and perhaps empower and make even more dangerous that threat from the CCP. You have issued recently a very important memo, a backgrounder, you call it, entitled Biden on China, Bad Policies, Bad Personnel. And I'd like to ask you just to address both of those very ominous developments, if you would.
Well, first of all, Frank, let me say that as chairman of the Republican Study Committee, I have an opportunity and a role to play in leading conservatives in the House toward building a consensus conservative agenda that we can all rally around in this post-Trump era, this new point that we find ourselves in as a Republican Party and a conservative movement. And on that front, it's important to note that we just had over the last 4 years in President Trump, the toughest president that we've ever had in confronting the China threat. In fact, I would argue he might be the only president that we've had in modern times who identified China as a threat to America. He named China as a threat. He moved our military toward a strategy of great power competition in confronting China. And he took great economic went to great economic lengths to hold China accountable for bad trade deals. Etc. So we went from President Trump, who's the toughest president we've ever had, to President Biden, who seems every day more and more so like he's more interested in playing footsie with China than he is in holding them accountable. So as chairman of the Republican Study Committee, which is the largest conservative caucus on Capitol Hill, we published a backgrounder, as you mentioned, the most extensive memo to date that I've seen in these beginning days of the Biden administration of what we're up against. And we listed a number of areas where the Biden administration has taken early actions to undo the Trump administration actions. And we also dig deeply into the backgrounds of significant members of the Biden administration who have deep ties to the Chinese Communist Party, who have profited from business dealings with China and with the Chinese Communist Party, who have made friendly comments about the rise of China, welcoming a rise of China rather than confronting the interests of the Chinese Communist Party that are in direct contradiction to the interests of the United States of America. So that's what our backgrounder is about. I'm happy to talk more with you about it, but it's important because there's nothing else like it on Capitol Hill, and Republican Study Committee, the group that I chair, is leading the way in confronting this threat that not a single Democrat, definitely not President Biden, are willing to address.
Yeah, and again, kudos to you for doing this. It builds on work that I know you also participated in the last session of Congress, of a China task force that was stood up. Intention was to have it be bipartisan, but as you say, the Democrats reneged on participating in that. But I see some of the ideas and themes that you all developed in that very important work now being built upon for this purpose. And just a quick word on, as I said to Gordon Chang, who was on in the segment prior to yours, Congressman, there seem to be sort of two facets to what the administration is doing on the policy side. One is they're outright revoking things they didn't like in the Trump agenda. And then they're also sort of reviewing, as they put it, with it seems the likely outcome being that they will ultimately wind up revoking, but not immediately, several other policies. And these touch on some very important priorities, I think, both for President Trump and for the American people. For example, the idea that we don't want Chinese equipment in our electric grid. Well, that's just so commonsensical, and regrettably, we do have Chinese equipment, by some estimates, between 200 and 300 transformers in our grid at the moment. So I so appreciate you calling this out as an example of a really misbegotten idea. Even if they just postpone acting on that Trump initiative, it's a mistake. But the idea that they might ultimately revoke it would be a formula for disaster, it seems.
Yeah, yesterday we had General H.R. McMaster speak to the Republican Study Committee, and I asked him a question. I said, "What is it going to take for us to make this a bipartisan issue again?" I mean, at one point, not that long ago, you had Democrats in the Congress who were willing to state publicly that China is the greatest threat that we face in America today. And today, you won't find a single Democrat who's willing to say that out loud, because their party leaders have told them not to. They've told them not to because they don't want them to be on the same side as Donald Trump. Even now that Donald Trump is out of office, they still don't want the Democrat Party leaders still don't want members of the Democrat party in the House to agree with the former president, who they loathe so much that they, how dare them agree with President Trump in saying that China is our greatest threat. But I ask H.R. McMaster, what's going to take to make this a bipartisan issue again? He said, you know, what we have to do is we have to educate the American people about why this is important, and why is it important that we confront China? What is the Chinese Communist Party up to? What is their end goal is to dominate the United States of America? What does that mean, and what are they doing? And we have to educate the American people. But with the Biden administration, again, I believe it's hard to believe this, but I believe already that Joe Biden will go down in history as the most friendly president that we've ever had to the Chinese Communist Party. And that's saying a lot after Obama and even some of the Republican presidents that we had who sought to appease China rather than hold them accountable. But you've got to go through the list, even just in the beginning weeks and days of the Biden administration, what the soft on China, the appeasement policy of the Biden administration already includes suspending an executive order that President Trump had that stop China from using our power grid. As you already mentioned, we've rejoined the World Health Organization, which is astonishing. The Biden administration refuses to commit to keeping Huawei on the Department of Commerce's entities list. The Biden administration has delayed Trump's executive order that puts sanctions on Chinese military companies operating in the United States. We've rejoined the UN Human Rights Council under President Biden. Jake Sullivan, Biden's national security advisor, has argued that we should publicly argued, I can't believe that he used this word, that we should, quote, welcome China's rise. That's the national security advisor to Joe Biden. Then you got the new Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, who co-founded a consulting company with deep ties with the Chinese Communist Party. That's what we're up against. This is just the beginning of the Biden administration. Imagine how much worse it's going to get in the days and months and years to come.
And as you know and observe in your background, Congressman Jim Banks, personnel is policy. And it's true of the 14 different members of the senior ranks of the Biden administration that you identified, including several that you've just described. But it's also true, it seems, of the president himself. And one of the things that was so infuriating, really, about the suppression of information about Hunter Biden's hard drive in the run-up to this election was that it denied voters insights into the degree to which the president himself, as well as his family himself, appears to have been deeply compromised by the CCP. And I just wonder, as you look at this, you know, you've got a national security background, you've served in the United States Navy, you work on the Armed Services Committee, you're exposed to classified information and familiar with the requirements of safeguarding it. Mustn't we be worried that the commander-in-chief of the United States himself has not only certain proclivities that are problematic, as do his subordinates, but also may well be subject to, you know, coercion by Chinese communists who play that game very well.
Yeah, Frank, you're making a powerful point. We can't let President Biden off the hook for his family's deep financial ties with the Chinese Communist Party either. And the Republican Study Committee and myself as chairman of the Republican Study Committee, we're not going to let him off the hook for that either. I mean, the irony wasn't lost on me yesterday that there were 100 times more stories written about Ted Cruz going to Cancun than there were about Hunter Biden going to China on Air Force Two and the Biden family profiting deeply from him doing so and is using his dad's position as vice president for him to profit from China. That irony wasn't lost on me. But that's what we're up against. We're up against a media that won't report it. They won't report the Biden family's financial interests with China. And at this point, we all have to, every American, Republican, Democrat, everyone in between, every congressman, every voter in the country has to sit back and scratch their head and wonder what is Joe Biden's interest in China that he's gone at these lengths to undo significant actions that were taken by the Trump administration to hold China accountable and backtrack on almost every single one of them. And that's astonishing to me. It's troubling. It's deeply troubling. We have to educate the American people about it. And Frank, I appreciate that you're on the front lines of doing just that.
And you are as well. We're going to take a brief break. When we come back with Congressman Jim Banks, we're going to talk a little bit more about the president's view of genocide and what we should make of that as a public policy challenge as well, right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are visiting, I'm pleased to say, for this second segment with Congressman Jim Banks. He is the chairman of the House Republican Study Committee, a Navy veteran and member of the House Armed Services Committee, who is very much national security minded and is doing important work in trying to ensure that we understand what is afoot with respect to the Chinese Communist Party and the myriad threats that it represents to us and the dangers of accommodating them, or worse yet, appeasing them. Congressman, again, thank you for joining us and staying with us. Let me ask you about something that President Biden said in the course of his town hall with Anderson Cooper on CNN on Tuesday in response to a question I guess caused him to wax somewhat incoherently, frankly, about China and Xi Jinping and his desire to establish and strengthen his absolute control of that country. But it led him at one point to a comment about genocide. I talked a little bit about it with Gordon. I'd be very interested in your thoughts on what he said and its implications.
Yeah, Frank, I'm old enough to remember when Democrats cared about human rights and genocide around the world. I guess not anymore. I mean, this is a pretty incredible comment from a president. Doesn't matter what his party affiliation is, for any president to say what Joe Biden said yesterday, said, quote, "Culturally, there are different norms in each country that their leaders are expected to follow related to genocide." This is an astonishing comment coming from any president, but for it to come from a Democrat president and from Joe Biden, our new president, is an astonishing note that I hope every American pays close attention to, because what he's saying is that he's bowing to pressure from Beijing to call out China's activities and the Chinese Communist Party's role in Uyghur Muslim genocide in their country. I mean, this is a pretty incredible statement. Then this morning I read another story, Frank, about from a whistleblower, a concentration camp whistleblower, who's exposed widespread gang rape and prisoners who are shackled to their cells in these Uyghur concentration camps. So what Joe Biden is saying in talking about cultural norms and sort of that America all of a sudden is going to turn a blind eye to something that in no other generation would America turn a blind eye to, this tells you that Joe Biden is on the hook. This tells you more than anything else that I've seen, Frank, that Joe Biden has been co-opted by the Chinese Communist Party. He's hell-bent on being the most friendly president that we've ever had to Beijing and the Chinese Communist Party. Chairman Xi got the president that he wanted, and we're gonna all of a sudden turn a blind eye to something that traditionally America would never turn a blind eye to. So it's deeply troubling to me. I'm gonna beat the drum as loudly as I can about what's going on in these concentration camps and beg my Democrat colleagues to stand up and do something about it. Stand up to Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden, the Democrat Party leaders who are telling you to be quiet about it. For whatever your reason is, for the Democrat Party establishment, for the president, for the Speaker of the House and other Democrat leaders to be fully willing turn a blind eye to the actions of the Chinese Communist Party, it's time to do something about it.
Well, I commend you for all of that. Congressman, a couple of thoughts. One is you alluded to the pressure that Joe Biden may be under from the Chinese Communist Party leader, Xi Jinping himself. He spent 2 hours on the phone with him the other day. We've gotten a very, very superficial readout of what on earth was said in the course of that conversation. We're assured that he made some of the important points about economic, you know, competition and human rights and Taiwan and Hong Kong. But do you think the American people have a need to know access to a transcript of those remarks, those, you know, comments back and forth? Because I'm terrified, I must tell you, that if Joe Biden was either taking orders from Xi, which I think is decidedly possible, or it was simply communicating a very submissive American attitude, that could be interpreted by Xi as essentially the green light, not only to more oppression of Uyghurs and who knows who else, but perhaps more aggressive behavior towards our friends and maybe even towards us.
Yeah, you got to point out the Democrat hypocrisy here. When Donald Trump spoke with Vladimir Putin, every Democrat in America was demanding that the transcript be released and every detail of the phone call be made public. If Russia is a fraction of the threat to America and to our interests and to our future as what we know that China is, then absolutely those phone calls should be made public. Did Chairman Xi threat President Biden? What did Chairman Xi say to President Biden that caused President Biden to take such a soft approach and bend over backwards to appease the Chinese Communist Communist Party in the aftermath of the call and make all of these, what I listed before, take all of these drastic actions to overturn Trump administration actions that were tough on China. He overturned so many of them. We have to assume that something was said on that call that motivated President Biden to do that. I'd like to know very much what was said in that call that caused it.
Well, to your point, some of these steps were taken, of course, before the call, but are consistent with a compliant role that I fear affirms our concerns about this degree to which he is indeed compromised. Two other quick thoughts, sir. I know there's another issue that I'd like to turn to quickly, but the San Francisco Democrats have an outsized role in the leadership of the party in Congress. Of course, Nancy Pelosi being one of them, Dianne Feinstein being another one, impeachment manager Eric Swalwell, member of the House Intelligence Committee, I guess, being another one. These are illustrative of people who I believe have been compromised by the role of the Chinese in that party machine in San Francisco, and may explain some of the kind of resistance that you've been experiencing in terms of trying to get Democrats to take steps that are that should fundamentally be bipartisan in character, because after all of us are in serious jeopardy from the Chinese Communist Party. And another thought is, when you chronicled a number of these problems in your backgrounder and in your comments just now, you described, I think, a bill of particulars that qualifies as a prima facie case of criminal behavior that warrants the designation of the Chinese Communist Party as a transnational criminal organization. Would you support such a designation?
I think so, Frank. I mean, look at the so-called United Front, or the efforts that the Chinese Communist Party takes within the United States of America, related to industrial espionage, related to military espionage.
Election interference.
Their efforts to interfere or affect our elections. I mean, how could we not name them as a international criminal organization of some sort? So it's something that we should explore further. It's why one of the pieces of legislation that I introduced last term, I've introduced again this term, in cracking down on the United Front, which is their forward sort of their outfit around for their not just related to espionage, but also to influence the American people in other ways through their propaganda machine. I've often talked about how I get the China Daily newspaper that mysteriously shows up at my doorstep as a member of Congress and does on all other members of Congress's doorstep, and nobody can put an end to it. Those
to say nothing of the Washington Post and the New York Times, which have their insert. Congressman, we're almost out of time, and I hope we'll come back and talk a bit more about, you've got five bills, I think, that you've recently introduced that touch on various aspects of the China problem, and we'd love to hear more about them. But I did want to ask you about something that Epoch Times reported on the other day, and I also wanted to commend you for, and that was your warning amidst the thrashing that's going on with Mitch McConnell and President Trump, that an effort to purge the Republican Party of Donald Trump would be disastrous. Talk about that, if you would, for a minute or two.
Well, it really would be. I mean, what we have to recognize is that President Trump was so popular in different places throughout America, many places throughout America, where where I come from, in Northeast Indiana, which is a manufacturing district, a manufacturing region. President Trump appealed to voters who weren't traditional Republican voters, like my dad, who was a lifelong union factory worker, who was never identified himself as a Republican, but President Trump inspired him and brought him into the fold. If we don't recognize President Trump's appeal to working people, to blue-collar America, to working-class America, and if we fail to recognize that appeal and adopt the policies and the mantle of the Trump agenda that attracted those voters into our fold, we will lose election. We won't win back the majority in 2022. We won't win back the White House in 2024 either. So I'm sad to see those Republican leaders. There are a few of them, not a lot of them, but a few leaders in the Republican Party who want to erase President Trump from the Republican Party. That would have a disastrous outcome if we do that.
Congressman Jim Banks, we are out of time. Thank you for yours, and thank you for your leadership in the House Republican Study Committee. We so appreciate what you're doing and look forward to further amplifying it in the days ahead. Thanks to all of you for listening as well. I hope you'll join us again on Monday, same time, same station, for more of Secure Freedom Radio. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.